So thanks for coming along to the hearing, and these are being recorded by Hansard, and a copy of the audio will be placed on the committee's website. Here today with me is obviously Sam Rowe, member of the committee, and Tim Clifford. He's also a member of the committee, and we've had apologies from Steve Thomas and the chair, Matthew Swinburne, so you're just going to have to put up with us today. We've also got our committee advisors and Hansard reporter. Before we begin, can you please state your full name and capacity in which you appear before the committee?
Barry John House, retired pensioner, former president of the Legislative Council.
Thank you. You will have signed a document entitled Information for Witnesses. Have you read and understood that document?
Yes, I have.
If for some reason you wish to make a confidential statement during today's discussion, or if your evidence will include any sensitive or controversial material such as allegations about another person, you should request that evidence be taken in private session. If the committee grants your request, you may defer receipt of the confidential evidence and make alternative arrangements to receive the evidence from you. This is to ensure that the evidence will be received in secure conditions. A transcript of the evidence will be provided to you to assist the committee. Please quote any document you want to, any full title of any document you refer to. Please be aware of your microphone, particularly as we're doing Zoom. And as you're only one witness, I don't think we have to worry about staying in turn. I remind you that the transcripts of today's discussions will be made public. Until the transcript of your public evidence is finalised, it should not be made public by you. Would you like to make an opening statement?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I hope you can hear me okay, can you?
Yeah. Come on.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to have a bit of input. This issue has been around for quite a while, and I think it's very opportune that you are examining it. My submission is self-explanatory in a lot of ways. I think it's timely that it was reviewed. The label Environment and Public Affairs was attached during the 1990s when there was a significant change in the makeup and membership of the Legislative Council. The general election in 1989, from that election onwards, it was based on the regional boundaries. And until that time, I guess historically you could argue that the National Party always had the balance of power, but there was always government or non-government clear majorities in the Legislative Council. From the 1990s on, the 1993 election on particularly, there was the advent of different parties, the Greens and the Democrats initially, and since then, of course, we've had quite a few other parties elected to a presence in the Legislative Council, so that now it's almost an impossibility for a government of the day to have an absolute majority in the Legislative Council. When the Environment and Public Affairs Committee was first set up, it was a vehicle to recognise that change, I believe, particularly in view of the Greens and Democrats' membership of the Legislative Council and their stated platform, I guess, revolved around environmental issues to a large degree. And there was no other vehicle at that stage, apart from select committees and the usual questions and motions in the House, for a significant public affair to be taken up and examined. So that was the thinking behind the establishment of the committee. Since then, I think times have moved on, that we've had different membership of different political parties. We've had different balances and different compositions. So I don't think the adage that environment is the sole province of any one particular party stands anymore. It's a mainstream issue. I guess you could argue that it has in some ways been a mainstream issue for centuries going back in our history. Kings Park would never have been established in the first place if there wasn't some sort of environmental consideration even 100 odd years ago. And the EPA was set up by Sir Charles Court's government in the 1970s. And that was, you wouldn't have got a more fiercer advocate for mining, but I believe it was the beginning of a view that environmental stewardship can exist alongside mining, forestry, urbanisation, and so on. So that's just my summation of the history of it, Colin. And the other important aspect of my submission is that Legislative Assembly committees are basically set up on the lines of portfolios, whereas Legislative Council committees are set up to conduct our roles. I'm still thinking of it as our roles in terms of scrutiny and accountability. And with environment a mainstream issue alongside law and order, education, health, housing, and so on, that's where I think it belongs in the Legislative Assembly, and the Legislative Committee adopts a more scrutiny, accountability approach. The other part of my submission was that the automatic referral of petitions to your committee is a vital difference between the Legislative Council and Legislative Assembly, and that should be very much maintained. It's pointless having a committee in one House of Parliament that duplicates another in another House of Parliament. So the automatic referral of petitions gives your committee a lot of relevance, which should be protected and maintained. In the Legislative Assembly, they merely get tabled, and there's no compulsion there for the Parliament or the government of the day to take any notice of them whatsoever. So it's far better that there is at least some consideration of them. In terms of name change, I'm not sure, but the word petitions probably needs to come into the name somewhere or other. Petitions and Public Affairs Committee maybe, but I'm sure your wise heads can sort that out.
Thanks, Barry. And I think you've identified some of the challenges for the committee. We've got a split personality, really. Environment on one hand and dealing with petitions on the other. And so maybe we'll just talk about petitions for the start and the petitions process, and then we'll talk about the environment side of it. But in your view, from your submission, petitions play an important role. Would you like to expand on that a bit and say why you think they play an important role in our society, our democracy, or our parliament?
Petitions are a very important way of empowering the public to provide a voice to the parliament. Whether it's effective or not varies in degrees, but it's important that they still have that empowerment, take an issue to the parliament, their elected representatives in a joint form. And that's why Legislative Council petitions are much stronger, I believe, than Legislative Assembly petitions, because at least a petitioner can rely on that petition receiving some consideration from a committee, which is important. Let me explain a bit about environment, and I don't want to denigrate people's passion and commitment to the environment in any way, shape or form. It's just how it's treated. If there is a petition involving an environmental issue, it can still be taken up by your committee, just as a petition containing a housing issue or a transport issue can still be taken up. But the distinction, I believe, lies in the consideration of the portfolio of environment and the policy surrounding environment. that better belongs as a Legislative Assembly Committee to me than a Legislative Council Committee.
Yeah. We've sent you some questions, but I'm just going to loosely go through those questions as a bit of a prompt. One of the challenges, and your experience may help here, is that sometimes expectations from petitioners about what the Parliament or this particular committee can do for them, meeting their expectations, well, can be meet it fully or not meet it at all. Got any thoughts about how we manage expectations or how the committee deals with it in that sense?
Yeah. Well, you all know that petitions can take wide and varied forms. They can be big petitions signed by 8,000 people, or they can be petitions signed by one person. They can be petitions that are very clearly thought through and articulated, or they can be petitions that are not sophisticated, if I can use those terms. They can be petitions that are vexatious. They can be petitions that contain conspiracy theories. So that's the first job of the committee, I believe, to have a process, and you probably already do, but a staging process, a sorting process of petitions. And to get to your question, Colin, you don't want to offend anybody by saying, no, your petition doesn't comply full stop, or your petition should be dealt with elsewhere full stop. But if it is in those categories, then I believe the committee should be providing a bit more clarity and explanation about where those people will go. In the questions that were put to me, planning processes have formed part of several petitions you've had this Parliament, by the sounds of it. And yes, the decision-making bodies lie elsewhere. Look, I haven't read all your reports, but rather than just say, we're not the decision-making body, you have to go elsewhere. Perhaps a more full explanation needs to be provided to the petitioners and the Parliament of exactly what the process is. If their argument in terms of a decision-making process is with a judicial body or some other organisation or the minister, then it should be pointed out in the committee's response to that petition.
Yeah, because I think our practice has been that we close petitions without much explanation about why we're closing them in some of our reports. So we probably need to get better at providing an explanation and a way forward for some of those petitions. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. I think that, yes, by all means, you can't consider everything, and there's a good reason why you can't or shouldn't. But if there's an obvious avenue for the petitioners to take, and they don't appear to have taken it before they've come to the Legislative Council with a petition, then I think a reasonable explanation in your report saying you've considered it, we're not the decision-making body, but in this case, we believe it clearly lies with the, State Administrative Tribunal or whatever it may be.
Yeah. Interestingly...
So give people some direction, I guess.
Yep. One of the things that we did, because I was on this committee in my first term, then I had a break for the second term, I'm back on it. But in the first term, we instigated when we first wrote to petitioners, we asked them if they'd taken it to the Ombudsman.
Yeah.
And often we'd get back the one liner saying, no, I have not taken it to the Ombudsman, or I have, or whatever. But we didn't really ask them for any proof. We just sort of took it on face value. Perhaps that's something we could do is, ask some proof around those sort of questions.
Yeah. Look, I recall when officers of the Parliament used to have, and probably still do, a good relationship, an informal relationship, if you like, with officers of bodies like the Ombudsman or like the Inspector of Custodial Services, so that officers could liaise with officers in there, and without divulging any details of anything, they could get an indication of, yes, this issue has been lodged with the Ombudsman, or no, it hasn't. And that, I don't think, would be breaking any serious confidentiality. It's just a yes, it's been raised with us, or no, it hasn't. That way you might be able to short circuit a lot of these issues where people whose first stop should have been the Ombudsman. Keeping in mind the Ombudsman's not a decision-making body either, they can only make recommendations. And therefore your committee will just know then how far down the track this query or question or complaint has gone.
Yep. We've done a fair bit of research in terms of what other committees are doing around other jurisdictions. And just some of our language is slightly different. So I'm referring to question three that we forwarded to you before, where we say our function is to inquire into and report on, while other committees just have consider. And that sort of fits within maybe setting expectations. Have you got any thoughts on the language there or how we should improve it?
Yeah, look, I can appreciate that some people may read those words and think there's going to be an automatic major inquiry into their issue. That needs to be explained very clearly, that you've got a staged approach and you will go to a major inquiry if and only the issue is serious enough and or you judge it to be serious enough, or it's not dealt with in any other sphere. I think that's a consideration the committee should take too. But change the word to consider, if you wish, to clarify your role a bit better. But you should also have the option, you should also retain the option of going to a major inquiry if you feel it necessary. And if you look around at what's happening in other areas and it is a major issue that people have continually sort of swept under the carpet and it needs some airing, then definitely take it up as a major inquiry. Take it up when there's a vacuum, I guess, and it appears that nobody else is taking this seriously and it needs to be dealt with and inquired. What am I trying to say? You have to make that judgmental call, in considering it, you have to sort of explain your reasons why you've taken that course of action in your reports to the Parliament and back to the petitioners.
Yeah. I think from my viewpoint, one of the criticisms of ourselves would be our reporting back to Parliament in a timely manner. We've been pretty spasmodic in our tabling of our reports on petitions, I reckon, which is a criticism of us. I don't know if you can think back about if it was better in the past and people knew what was happening in the committee, or is there a way that we can improve how we improve our transparency, I guess, in terms of reporting back to Parliament?
Yeah, there was a series of reports that bundled up quite a few petitions. I'm not sure whether you still do that, but if they're basically short, sharp inquiries, desktop inquiries, if you like, then you can report back on a reasonably quick basis, I believe, with an explanation of the next stop for the petitioner should be this judicial body or whatever. It's always a problem, and there's always resources and time limits and so on, but the more timely you can be, the better. It's very frustrating if issues drag out for 2, 3 or 4 years and nothing's heard as an outcome.
Okay, thanks, mate. Yeah, like I think as you've already pointed out, we sent to you is about we've received a lot of petitions on planning processes, and we've also received a lot of petitions on the almost the same issue, but couched in slightly different terms. So we would call them repetitious petitions. And I would say we deal with them as best we can without any formal set of rules. Any thoughts on how we might have some process steps to, or some formal steps to actually deal with a lot of those, vexatious, frivolous or repetitive, especially where we can't do much about it, especially like local government planning laws?
We'll bundle up the ones you can into the same sorts of issues and report on it that way. That's one way of doing it. But by all means, don't allow your committee to get totally bogged down with vexatious petitions. Try and sort out the real meat in what's important in terms of petitions, and concentrate your efforts on that. But the secret lies in then explaining exactly what your committee is empowered to do and how it goes about it, not just leave it open saying the committee didn't deal with this or something like that. Explain to the parliament and the petitioners that in some rare cases you might say this is a vexatious issue, but in most cases you'll be diplomatic, I'm sure, and say this is a difficult issue that the petitioner needs to go to this body or that body to get it resolved or read better.
Hey, I'm just going to try to test your memory, because you may well have been around when this committee was first established and the debate about it. And if you just think about the debate around the petition's function, was there any clarity when the debate occurred about exactly what the committee was empowered to do on behalf of the parliament?
Not total clarity, I admit. Look, the committee system in the Legislative Council only really started in the 1980s, really, and it was still quite young when I started in the parliament in 1987. So it was still very much evolving through the 1990s. And that goes back to my comment a while ago that the advent of Greens members, Chrissy Sharp and Giz Watson and so on, and a couple of Democrats put a focus on environmental issues, and then the Legislative Council independently just picked that up and said, well, yeah, nobody's sort of doing anything in that area. And at that stage, there was no comprehensive committee system set up in the Legislative Assembly at all.
Right.
So that only happened in the late 1990s.
Yeah.
And they were based around portfolios and policy issues.
Mm.
So Legislative Council was really in this territory on its own, in a sense. That's why, it wasn't clearly defined. That was our role. The Legislative Assembly's role is the other role.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the committee's a product of its own makeup back in the 90s, as you're pointing out. And so in my mind, it's about, well, does it still reflect the issues that it was established under, in a sense?
Sure. Yeah, well, I haven't followed your reports very closely, I must admit, in the last couple of years. but I'm sure you've done a mountain of good work following some important issues around, and I'm sure you've had quite a few time wasters, if I can be blunt, I suppose.
I remember my first term as on this committee, we had something like 100 petitions a year to deal with. And yeah. you just had to get better at dealing with them. I don't think we get as many now, but we also get some quite repetitive ones, but we get some really meaty ones as well to deal with. And you've got to have some sort of decision-making about how you treat them, I think, is the way. Yeah. And so at the moment, it probably relies on the individual members of the committee to use their decision-making ability and skills to actually weed that stuff out. Do you think there's any other way we can put a bit of more process about it that might be able to pass on to future committees or committee members?
Yeah, you need a filtering system, no doubt about that. And you're very capable staff, and I can see Alex there in the corner, can do preliminary assessments of your petitions and either group them or filter them in some way. But the ultimate decisions, of course, comes back to members to either endorse that or sometimes say, no, you've lumped that one in with that other one, which doesn't fit. You know, I think that must be separate. But ultimately, it is your responsibility, yes, to filter it. But you need some probably better guidelines that you leave the portfolio policy questions and just chase issues, if you like, just like you would chase issues if it was another portfolio, not just environment, if it was transport or health.
Yeah, we did a bit of analysis of how we instigated some inquiries, and there's a number of ways that inquiries begin with the Parliament or in this committee. Some are instigated because of a petition we received. Some are self-instigated inquiries. And I think one in the last term was around hydraulic fracturing, which when Simon O'Brien was the chair. And then as the Environment Committee, you can get referrals from the House to take up an environmental inquiry. But I don't think it's occurred since I've been in the Parliament. And I think from looking backwards, there's might only be two in the last 15 or 20 years or something like that. So you have to question what is the role of the environmental part of our committee in that sense. And that's basically what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, well, the Legislative Council have a legislation committee now, which didn't exist when this committee, Environment and Public Affairs, was first established, and it operated for 10 years before the Legislation Committee came into being. If you still retain the word public affairs in your title, then it still leaves it open for a referral from the House, or even a self-referral, if you wish, for an item that you as a committee or the House itself considers serious enough, which is not being dealt with properly by another Legislative Council committee, or is being swept under the carpet somewhere in public debate. It still leaves it open for that, I think.
Yeah. Interestingly, you guys jump in whenever you want to. Interestingly, we've got the ability to refer a petition or an issue onto another parliamentary committee, which I think in my time we've probably done two or three times, but not a lot, even though there's obvious overlap, I think, which I think is still worthwhile maintaining that ability. But then, of course, you don't have any say in if it gets taken up as inquiry or the issue is dealt with, do you?
No, it's still vital to retain it. You mightn't use it that often, but I recall when I was chair of the Standing Committee on Public Administration that we took up, the two parliaments actually, a considered inquiry into water reform, and a couple of other committees were also receiving approaches on similar sorts of topics, which they referred to us, and we bundled that up into one inquiry from the standing from the Public Administration Committee. Yep.
Yeah. And which other committees referred it to you? Can you remember?
I think it was your committee, the Environment and Public Affairs Committee. Yep.
Yep. Well, up to about question 8 on my reckoning, so we're going to keep going, mate.
Okay.
And this is the review into the standing orders that happened back in 2011, and that would have been done by the committee you were chair of, I would have thought, which is the Privileges Committee. And there was a change basically from those that are being dealt with in the courts. And so it changed from I'm just going to get the language right, Alex. Help me out here. It changed. So in 2011, Standing Order 133C7 prohibited a petition where it sought relief or declaration of circumstances where the matter is judiciable. Is that right? And legal remedies available to the petitioner have not been exhausted. Yep. And the standing order was removed as part of the 2011 reforms. Right, because the Committee on Procedure and Privileges stated that the standing order was impractical to enforce. Have you got any, can you shed us any light on that? Because we would like some insight into that, noting that other committees and petition committees in other jurisdictions maintain the ability to say it's before the courts and we're not going to deal with it.
Yeah, the thinking behind the removal of that that clause was that the Parliament shouldn't be taking on the roles of judicial organisations. And that's why that was removed. In answer to that, the petitioners aren't always aware of that, and they'll still come to the Parliament and saying, you know, you're the ultimate decision-making body. Well, in some cases, the Parliament's not. In many cases, it's not. But the petitioner needs to be made aware of it, and it needs to be explained better, I think. Mm. It needs to be clarified that the Parliament can inquire into things, and that's why that I've underlined the word enforce there. The Parliament cannot enforce a judicial body to take a certain decision or line. It should be explained to the petitioner that that's not our role as a Parliament, that we can inquire into things and clarify issues and perhaps provide recommendations to the Parliament and the government, who ultimately are involved in legislation, which then the judiciary are empowered to enforce.
Yep.
So it's semantics a little bit, but Parliament can't set itself up as the judge and jury on every matter.
No. You know,
I'm sure you'd like to, but
I don't want the responsibility, thanks.
Yeah, no way.
I find it really interesting that we get a range of petitions that have a range of motivations behind them. So some are clearly political, put in by people, MPs, on a political issue. Yep. Others are frivolous or vexatious, or might be on planning. But there's actually quite a lot that come in through because of the last resort. So people are kind of going, oh, I've tried everything. What else can I do? And then you've got to somehow weed your way through those.
Yeah, well, that's when you need the sage advice and the wise heads of you guys there to sift through the issues. In my time, there were a couple of very difficult ones that we dealt with. On the Public Administration Committee, for instance, that one was a dispute involving a university professor called Rindos at the University of WA. And that was basically an inquiry of last resort, because the universities had this body called the Visitor, who was supposedly the last resort. But the Visitor was the governor of Western Australia, and they washed their hands of it and said, we don't want to get involved in all that stuff. I'm not sure whether you remember it, but another one was there was a blue house in Fremantle that a guy had been given all sorts of grief by the Fremantle City Council over many years. And as a protest, he painted his house an ugly blue colour and made it as difficult and as big an eyesore as he could. But that basically destroyed his life, because he got so consumed by it that eventually, it was a no-win situation. And that's why they come to the Parliament, I suppose. Yeah, you know, the Parliament's the last resort. You have to give us some sort of direction there. And we tried to, but the ultimate decision-making was still lay with other bodies.
Yep. Any more questions? Just, just to get it on record, Barry, it seems to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but we should probably remove the environment part of the committee's functions and concentrate on the petitions and public affairs part for this committee. Is that kind of where your thoughts going?
Yeah, I think so. And treat environment like every other mainstream issue. You don't dismiss environment completely, but take it out of the name, because I think that confuses a lot of people that you're a committee set up specifically to give us answers to environmental issues. Well, sometimes you can't. You can conduct an inquiry into an environmental issue just like you can into a planning issue or a transport issue.
Yeah.
By taking the word environment out, I believe it stops that misrepresentation, I suppose, to the public of exactly what the committee do.
Yeah. And then where my mind goes to is, while the Legislative Council are in charge of their own destiny, we can't tell the Legislative Assembly what to do in terms of picking up a portfolio-based environment committee. But we can certainly point out to the LC that maybe we need to revisit how we deal with this joint responsible committee.
Yep, and I think informally and formally you can make an approach through your presiding officers and clerks to say, let's get an overall balance here of exactly what the Parliament of Western Australia is responsible for and who's doing. We don't want duplication and we don't want gaps. So that's basically it, I think.
Yep. I would say you would agree that portfolio is better placed within the LA committee system.
I believe it is, yes.
Okay, let's have a look. I'm just going to catch up on my notes here, mate.
Okay, I've got some red bar here too.
Um, 16 inquiries.
You did notice I'm self-isolating, and I did get out of my pyjamas and put them.
What do you got on the bottom half?
By a newsreader.
Yeah. I think we've covered most of the ground generally.
I
don't know, anything else you,
I think so.
Anything you want to add or question? Anything from you, Alex? I think we've covered it. I know I'm not usual.
Which question is that?
Yeah, I think we kind of covered that. I'm just reading questions 11 and 12 we sent to you, Barry. I don't know if you had any further notes on that.
Yep. Yeah, I think I've said most of that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I guess I've got the word specific here. Take, I think by the name of the committee being Environment and Public Affairs, people will logically take that as a specific committee dedicated to environment.
Yeah.
And I don't think you are. I think you are a committee dedicated to petitions and public affairs. The specific role of environment, as I think, belongs in the Legislative Assembly. But the you still want to maintain the ability to deal with environmental issues in a general sense, but not be specifically identified as the committee to go for the environment issues.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's right, because if you look at the historic activity of the committee, it really has been driven by the petitions and public affairs part of the terms of reference. And if you look at, well, I think we've only had two or maybe three referrals from the House on the environment. So it's not, even the House doesn't even see it as a, potentially isn't it, as a environment committee in a sense.
Yep. Yep, I think that's true too. Mm. And historically, that's been true. Even the 20 years of its existence, I don't think there's been a trend there of many referrals at all on environmental issues.
No, no. Any other questions? Anything from you, Barry, or?
No, it's. It's good to see you back at work.
Yep.
No, good luck. All I can do is reiterate, I'm pleased that you're examining your role. The Legislative Council should be true to its role of scrutiny, accountability and inquiry. And at the same time, the Legislative Council must be relevant and contemporary, so that you must be prepared to change. And I think since the inception of this committee 20 years ago, there has been some change, which you probably need to acknowledge. I know there was talk about it in the last Parliament when I was still there, but it never got up. But it's opportune that you're doing it, I think.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks, mate, and we really appreciate you putting in a submission and being available for a hearing, because we need to draw on experiences like yours who have seen the whole gamut of it. And if we don't re-examine what we're doing, no one's going to do it, are they? Because we're the ones internally.
That's right.
So really,
that's
really
right.
Appreciate
the House of Parliament is the master of its own destiny, and yes, you do need to noble guys every now and again and look at your functions and your roles and what you're doing.
Yeah.
I will say that being a country member, Colin, it's much easier operating on Zoom like this for an hour than driving 100,000 kilometres a year.
Yep, this might be the new norm. Hey, before we go, maybe I'll be cheeky and ask you about e-petitions and what you think about those.
I thought they might come up, yeah. Look, in a modern technological world, I can understand people wanting that facility to do it, but in terms of your ability to deal with them, that's always worried me, that if e-petitions were opened up completely, and you still had the same degree of commitment that you would conduct, at least inquire into every petition, then you would need, your committee alone would need a lot more resourcing to track down that your petitioners aren't coming from Paris or Rio de Janeiro or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with Western Australian issues, not issues outside your jurisdiction. My view at the moment, it still hasn't changed, I suppose, from when I was there, that, I can appreciate the idea, but it's just too hard.
Mm.
If you can find a way to make it work, I know the clerk's very keen on it, but he was, unless he's changed his mind. If you can find a way to make it work, yeah, it's logical in that you could become contemporary and change with it, but you can't subjugate all of your other responsibilities for that either.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you adopt an e-petitions process, you're going to have some new internal processes to deal with it.
Yeah.
In the appropriate way, including making sure it's for the citizens of Western Australia first and foremost. Because I can see some real advantages because of distances in our state. If it's about an interaction with Parliament, it opens those up possibilities, but can also go too far if you're not careful.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's a big enough job scrutinising petitioners with addresses and everything to make sure that they're all valid. But an e-petition just makes that 10 times as hard, I would have thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's all from me.
Okay.
Thanks, Barry.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks,
all
Barry.
Right. Thanks, Tim. All the best with everything.